Welcome back to KSCJ Radio, 1360 AM, 94.9 FM in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vikalskis, and this is Having Read That, conversations with authors about their books. I'm joined by Charles Lane, who is an editorial board member and op-ed columnist with the Washington Post, and he's out with his brand new book, Freedom's Detective, The Secret Service, The Ku Klux Klan, and The Man Who Masterminded America's First War on Terror. It's available now wherever your fine books are sold. Charles, do you remember when you first heard about Hiram Whitley?
Yes. I was working on a previous book about the Reconstruction period, and his name and his extraordinary background as chief of the Secret Service and a spy for the Union during the Civil War sort of came up, and I made a mental note to pursue a man who I considered at that time the most interesting American no one had ever heard of.
So tell me a little about Whitley. Where did he grow up?
He was born in Maine and grew up on what was then the frontier of northeastern Ohio, but ran away from home and sort of pursued all kinds of things like cattle driving and fishing on the out of the Georgia's banks off New England. And he was kind of a hybrid American. He was a New Englander, a Midwesterner, and a Southerner, kind of all at once.
So, time-wise, we're talking the mid-1830s when he's born, and so as he's coming of age, Civil War is starting. Where does Whitley fit into to life as the Civil War is beginning?
Well, he migrated to Kansas. As you know, that was a divided territory between the pro- and anti-slavery forces. And characteristically of Whitley, he was kind of on both sides. He posed as anti-slavery and betrayed a group of abolitionists and escaping slaves. When he was caught doing that, the anti-slavery people forced him out of Kansas, and he wound up in Louisiana, where, ironically enough, he signed up with the Union as a spy and spent most of the Civil War down in Louisiana and Texas working for the Union Army, which is ultimately what led him to his career in federal law enforcement after the Civil War.
He didn't have prior government or military experience. Could he have avoided serving in the Civil War altogether?
I suppose he could have. He certainly avoided serving in the Confederate Army for as long as he could until the Union occupied Louisiana. He is an interesting figure, Brian, in the sense that I think we usually think of the Civil War as a very either-or proposition where people were either Confederate or Union. Whitley, I found intriguing in part because he showed that there were a not that small number of people who somehow managed to get through the process by kind of switching sides. And, of course, he drew on all his talents of espionage and deception and investigation to kind of make that happen.
What would have been the impetus for switching sides? Personal belief, or was it something more?
I think it was really just a matter of opportunism. Again, he kind of went out to Kansas and started out living in the abolitionist community of Lawrence, but when he was approached with an offer from the slave catchers to spy for them for money, he took it. Similarly, when he found himself in Louisiana, he sort of sized up the opportunities when the Union Army rolled into New Orleans, and he thought, you know, these guys have more power and money. I think there's more of a chance there. I don't want to portray him as a complete mercenary, though, because there was a very interesting moment while he was in Louisiana during the war where he really came to the rescue of an escaped slave who he helped press charges against his former overseer. And I think that showed that for all his opportunism, there was a little corner of Whitley's heart that was kind of idealistic, and that was what I think in part made him effective in fighting the Klan later on.
All right, let's talk about the Secret Service. At the time, I mean, we think of Secret Service today, we think of the people that protect the President of the United States, but as the Secret Service is becoming formed, what was the whole purpose behind it?
Well, it was formed initially and kind of improvised to defeat counterfeiting. Because the United States had never had a national currency before the Civil War, and when it developed the first one, of course, people tried to forge it. So they put together a detective force to infiltrate counterfeiters. And that was Whitley's initial mission when he was signed up as the chief in 1869. But since the government didn't have any other form of covert agency or detective force when the Ku Klux Klan sort of emerged, they drew on the Secret Service to help fight that, too.
So there was no FBI at the time, right?
The Secret Service really was the sort of FBI of the 1860s and 1870s. And it was, obviously, we would consider it very small for our standards today. It was perhaps 24 to 30 detectives at its height. But in its time, this was a very controversial idea. That the federal government would have police and detectives when, you know, people were used to states having all the power over criminal law enforcement. And so both the Secret Service as a concept and Whitley himself were very controversial and considered sort of an innovation that many people thought was kind of dangerous, would like lead to a police state like they had in Prussia or France or something like that.
So how does Whitley end up becoming chief?
Well, his first big case against the Klan actually took place in 1868, just before he became chief of the Secret Service. And he did it on behalf of the United States Army when they were trying to find and try the people who had killed a prominent pro-Reconstruction politician in Georgia. And Whitley was recruited to investigate that and did such a successful job of it that he caught the attention of Ulysses S. Grant, who later became president in 1869, and Grant's team thought that Whitley would be the right person to run all of the federal detectives.
As the Ku Klux Klan is formed, what is the purpose behind that organization at the outset?
You know, I guess in modern terms we would call it a terrorist organization whose goal was voter suppression. They had two main ideas that they wanted to kill or intimidate the leading politicians, black and white, who supported Reconstruction in the South, and also just to intimidate African Americans from using the voting rights that they had gotten after the Civil War. And, in fact, the Klan was extremely successful in suppressing voter turnout in 1868 and 1870. And so by 1871, the government, the federal government, was getting kind of desperate and worried that if this continued in the 1872 election, it could, in effect, you know, restore the Confederacy to power in Washington. And that's when they turned to the U.S. Army and the Secret Service to crack down on them.
Was there a point in time when the Ku Klux Klan went from being a group that was formed and citizens exercising free speech rights to all of a sudden a criminal organization?
It probably made that transition in the period between 1865 and 1866 when the Republican Congress, over Andrew Johnson's veto, passed the Civil Rights Act and for the first time created a situation in which the federal government was going to enforce the civil rights of African Americans in the South. And the Klan converted, as you suggest, from what was essentially a social club into something that was much more violent and much more political. It happened pretty quickly, and it happened basically in response to that change in federal policy.
Now, this was sort of revolutionary at the time because this wasn't the government violating the civil rights of citizens. This was citizens violating the civil rights of citizens, right?
Yeah, and that created a lot of difficult and original legal and constitutional issues for the federal government because really there had never before been this idea that the federal government could enforce civil rights. It had all been left up to the states. And the exact authority and limitations for that were all kind of in flux. They were passing new statutes like the Civil Rights Law. They were passing the 14th Amendment and then the 15th Amendment in 1870 to protect voting rights. And so when the government, through the Secret Service and other agencies, made this effort to enforce, there was a really strong, there wasn't just a backlash from the Klan, there were a lot of people in politics who thought that, well, this might not be constitutional, and of course, the tactics of infiltration were looked upon as very suspiciously by opponents of the Secret Service, and so there was tremendous controversy about this throughout the period.
So as Hiram Whitley is spearheading this and trying to infiltrate the Klan, what was this covert campaign, what did it consist of?
It took place over the course of 1871 and 1872. And basically, they were given a budget by the Justice Department and told to go into North and South Carolina, Alabama, Georgia, a little bit of Mississippi, and basically pose as Klansmen. And their goal was to get inside these organizations, learn who all their members were, learn all their code words, and find witnesses to atrocities. They often went undercover and found African-American victims, and to turn over all that information ultimately to the federal prosecutors and federal courts so that these people could be punished. Interestingly enough, a number of these people Whitley used were new immigrants, some from Germany, some from Italy, and they were, oddly enough, they were very effective at infiltrating the Klan because they came up with stories about how they had come to the South looking for areas for their countrymen to buy land, and they weren't suspected of being Yankees because they were foreigners.
When you have a person like Hiram Whitley recruiting all these people, he's really gathering information, putting it back to the federal government. What did the federal government do with the information? Was it commence prosecutions?
Well, they did a couple of things. One, as you say, was to use the information for prosecution. But another really important point was simply to have intelligence, to know what exactly was going on, because there wasn't a lot of hard information, you know. We're talking about things going on in remote areas beyond the telegraph. A lot of people were denying that the Klan was even a real organization. Some people claimed it was all just propaganda. And once you put that hard information in the hands of decision makers in Washington, they knew what they were up against. And also Whitley helped publicize a lot of what his men found out. As you learn in the book, he eventually published a lot of the Secret Service's files in 1872 in a short book that, again, brought out the details of what was going on and educated the public. And so it was a kind of a combination of intelligence and law enforcement. Obviously, in our time, those functions are separate in the government, but they weren't thinking in those terms then.
How political was this job with the Secret Service as far as reflecting the mood of the administration or the majority of the country at the time?
Well, things were very partisan in the 1870s. It would have been impossible for the Secret Service to run, because Grant was a Republican, to run as with a lot of Democrats in it. So it was taken for granted that Whitley would be a Republican and that the people he recruited were at least neutral, and most of them were Republicans. And in a way, that was both the strength and the weakness of the Secret Service. It meant that they were committed to the government's goals, but also that they could be vulnerable to partisan manipulation and partisan opposition later on. And as you'll learn in the book, Whitley himself became susceptible to partisan. He got involved as kind of a partisan operative, doing political dirty tricks in Washington for certain members of the administration. And when he was caught, that was the beginning of the end of his career.
That story in the book is so fascinating because it was one of the dumbest political scandals I think I've ever heard of. But nonetheless, I'm not going to spoil it, but it's almost as bad as a third-rate burglary at the Watergate, right?
Well, there are those who say that the first Washington burglary case, the one that you're describing, and I'll just briefly sketch it without spoiling it, basically Whitley and tried to frame an opponent of the administration for a burglary with not happy results. But yes, there is a kind of a parallel. That was one of the most enjoyable parts of the research, was finding out how many of the episodes that we think of as our sort of uniquely modern actually had parallels, and pretty close parallels, you know, more than 100 years ago.
Well, they say history doesn't repeat itself, but it certainly rhymes, correct?
Yeah, and sometimes the poetry is not all that flattering to the people who participated.
All right. Well, this book is called Freedom's Detective, The Secret Service, the Ku Klux Klan, and the Man Who Masterminded America's First War on Terror by Charles Lane. It's available now wherever your books are sold. You'll learn all about Hiram Whitley, who, as Charles says, is one of the greatest historical figures you've never heard of. That's what makes these things so fun, is finding out historical people that nobody has ever heard of to date. Charles, this was a fantastically entertaining and interesting book. Thanks for putting it out, and thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me on, Brian, and I hope your listeners will read and enjoy it.
This has been Having Read That on KSCJ Radio in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vakalskas. Check out all of our episodes on our website, kscj.com. Also, be sure to like Having Read That on Facebook and subscribe to our iTunes podcast. Thanks to segment producer John Weisler. We will be back next time.